buying time, killing people that's in line. Lower classes, social slime, they don't matter. Genocide, sick from water, sick from air. Making money, they don't care. Caesar shit, force of air. Fuck them back, it's only for they warm. They shoot, they kill, they max so from rain. They burn the kids, no one lives gun. Trees, lime, to your face. Buying time, killing people next in line. Lower classes, social slide. They don't matter, genocide. Sick from water, sick from air. Making money, they don't care. See the shit, force a bear. Fuck them back, that's only fair. They bomb, they shoot, they kill. They mass up from rain. They burn the kids. No more leaves, gun, trees. Lie to your face. Fight and die, cause God forgives. Yeah.
Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Ron Stevens. This is UCY.TV, and the show is called Rock the Boat. And tonight, I mentioned this on Tuesday night show, that we had some organic farmers and customers of an organic farmer that were going to be on the show, and we're going to do that right away. And this is basically to help explain some of the problems that that these farmers are contending with as far as the government is concerned. While the government may tell you they want you to eat healthy and that's not exactly the truth. And they've really been beating up on these organic farmers here in Ontario. In particular, one Michael Schmidt, who is really the head man on this whole thing. He is 24 years. He's been persecuted relentlessly by the Ontario government. And on the 29th and 30th, there's going to be a hearing about an injunction to try and shut him down permanently. 24 years, Michael has been supplying not only raw milk, but cheese and vegetables and whatnot. And in those 24 years, nobody has ever become ill. And this is about control of a food industry, government control, bureaucratic control. And it is harming a lot of people because a lot of people cannot get the healthy food that they're trying to get their hands on. So I'm going to bring Paul Noble in here. And he is a gentleman that I met at one of Michael's trials. And a super guy, understands he's cleansed the land of his farm. Took him, I don't know, it was 14, 11 years, I think it was. To actually cleanse the land to get rid of the pesticides in the land so they actually have a real organic farm so they can grow real food again. And like I said, we'll talk about that a little bit, and then we'll get some input from a couple of the folks that are his customers. So I'm going to try and get Paul in here now, and we'll do that. I got you, Paul. I got. Hello? But anyways, this is fascinating because 24 years of Michael Schmidt, I mean, it takes a, you know, I've talked to a lot of pretty tough people and, you know, hello?
Hello.
Paul, I got you. Okay.
Yes. Yep.
Welcome to the show.
Yes.
So you are one of these, I don't want to call you a bandito, but you're one of these organic farmers. who are also running a milk share program, right?
That is correct.
And
that
how long have you been running your milk share program?
I've been formally running it for 7 years now.
7 years?
Yes.
And I take it your customers are happy. And
yes, we have a real good customer base, and we have people that's been with us for 7+ years.
Now, you're not just a raw milk farmer, is it? Michael's not just a raw milk farmer, right? Like you, what all do you produce there?
Well, we produce eggs, and we produce field-raised chicken and beef and raw milk as well. And a little bit of produce when it's available. We don't have a whole lot. Just
right. Yeah. So, but this is all 100% organic, right?
That's right. I'm not certified organic, but I'm self-proclaimed and customer certified because we have customers on the farm 6 days a week.
Yeah.
And we have an open door policy there. They can go anywhere on the farm. They're welcome anywhere on the farm.
Well, yeah, it makes them feel part of the farm then, right? It's part of
that. And we have nothing to hide.
No. Okay, so you've been doing this 7 years. And have you had any problems with the authorities at all?
The first year I started up 7 years ago in April, they came here. They wanted to, I wasn't home. I actually happened to be at the lab delivering a milk sample. And they came in and they said it was imperative I talk with them. And I invited them back the following week, but they didn't show. So we had a little rally here instead.
Yeah. So it's one group supporting another group, and it's all basically one big group.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm gonna bring in Ira, who immigrated her and her family from the Ukraine in 1994, I believe. And she actually, we talked last night briefly, and she actually told me some pretty interesting things about the Ukraine and about the food system over there and whatnot. And she was a little freaked out. And then her youngest child was having breathing problems. And that's, I guess, when she found you. She was trying to get into Michael, but Michael was full.
That's right.
And
that's right.
And it got over to you. So I'm going to bring Ira in, and I'm also going to bring in Karen, who started drinking raw. I don't know when exactly she hooked up with you guys, but I just had a chance to talk to her quite briefly, and she wasn't able to drink pasteurized milk anymore. It was being very negative to her system. And so I'll bring her in as well and see where we can go with this. Okay, so have I got Ira?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, so I've got Paul in here, Ira in here, and we're just waiting for Karen to hook up. Now, Ira, you have a very, very interesting story out of the Ukraine because you only got here, what, in 94, I think it was, right?
Yep.
94. So we hear all these stories about raw milk being detrimental to one's health. And I don't even know how they can spin this because, you know, I always look at it, if raw milk is so dangerous, we'd all be dead. There'd be nobody on the planet because everybody drank raw milk at some point throughout the ages. But you in particular had a problem with your youngest daughter who was having some, you know, breathing problems and that. So can you just touch on that?
Yeah, sure. My daughter was born in 2009 and she was breastfed. At 6 months, she started eating pretty much everything, but she never had milk until she went to nursery. She was about 12 months old. I had to go back to work. And about 4 or 6 weeks later, I started noticing that she had this permanent congestion in her chest. She was constantly wheezing, and it's like a thick mucus there that she couldn't cough up. The pediatrician said that she might be having asthma, that it sounds like the asthmatic symptoms, and she might benefit from steroids. Steroids weren't my choice, so I took her to the naturopath, and the first thing she said, take her off pasteurized milk, replace it with rice milk. We did so, and all her symptoms cleared up, like within 2 weeks. After that, I started looking for raw milk because I believe that cow's milk is way better for the kids than processed rice milk, even organic, you know. I was bombarding, I found Michael Schmidt online, and I was bombarding them with the emails asking if I could join their CowShare program. They were at their full capacity, and they said they were educating farmers, other farmers, how to produce milk in the modern time, adhering to all strict hygienic rules, you know, sterilizing the equipment, cooling milk right after the processing, so that the milk literally goes from the cow into sterilized jars, and there is no possibility of contamination in the process because milk is technically sterile, like breast milk. So as soon as Paul and Kathy graduated, I was right there the next day after I received the email that there is a new operation that is ready for us.
And you've been doing that since, right?
Well, my daughter to date has drunk about over 2,000 liters of milk. She started drinking raw milk when she was 19 months. And even the naturopath was kind of apprehensive. She said, are you sure you want to do it? I said, well, absolutely. My older kids in Ukraine drank raw milk since infancy. Nothing ever happened, and I don't think anything will happen here. She, what can I say about her? She has great teeth. She doesn't need much of the dental care. She never had a single ear infection. I got a knock on the wood. She never was sick enough to take antibiotics. Her immune system is great. She gets a cold, she's over it within 24, 48 hours. So I can't complain. She would always prefer her raw milk to any other drinks. Milk and water, that's the only beverages that she drinks because she finds juice too sweet. And I'm not prepared to give it up, and I'm going to fight to keep it going.
Well, the naturopath that you were talking about here is that's a classic case, I think. Mm-hmm. Even though this man or woman was a naturopath, the propaganda is in their heads. Right? That raw milk, exactly. Are you sure about this? Right? So that propaganda yep. runs strong and deep. And we got to get over that, right? Because it's natural food. You know, I've got yep. now, this is a little bit off subject real quick, but now I was actually looking at some videos when I was doing some research for Michael, and I saw somebody was from raw milk and they were putting something dark in it. Now, what are they doing? And it turned out it's molasses, right? Blackstrap molasses. Now, when I was a kid, there was my grandma's houses. Everybody had blackstrap molasses in the house. But it's another case. It's almost the same as pasteurization. You know, all of the nutrients are in what they took out of the sugar cane. The processed sugar is useless to you. It's not even good for you. But the blackstrap molasses is full of magnesium and manganese and iron, and it's just, they call it a superfood, right? And it's the same thing as raw milk, okay? Once you adulterate the product, it's not the same. It's that simple. And you know, the way they superheat the milk, they can't say it's milk anymore. They really can't say it's milk. It's a milk product, but it's not milk. The milk came out of the cow, then they messed with it, and it's not the milk anymore. And I think that's why people have so much problem with pasteurized milk. I'm gonna bring in Karen. We got you, Karen?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. Now, the same thing, just briefly, we talked just before the show a bit, and you were having problems with pasteurized milk some years back.
Yes.
And so how did you come to search out Paul?
When I lived up north where there was no access, so I drank distilled water when I stopped drinking milk. I just drank water all the time. And but when I came down here to Stratford, I started, well, it was, we've been 5 years. So it's just four years ago that I found them. And I had been drinking coconut, made my own coconut milk, almond milk, or just drank water. But when I found out that I could get raw milk, I wanted it because I had read so much about it, how healthy it is for you. And it is a superfood. So I wanted it. And the first time I tasted it, I mean, it was like, it's delicious.
It's
delicious.
Like a hello moment, isn't it?
It is. Like I just felt, and the thing that I found very quickly was that I felt satisfied. When I had a meal after it, I was satisfied. I felt that I didn't want anything else. The snacking in between meals stopped. I wasn't craving things. And I give the credit to the raw milk, I think, because I was finally being, we eat really well, mind you. We eat good food, we eat clean food, and we're really foodies, like all of us are, I think, that drink raw milk. But yes, the raw milk is something that I don't want to give up. And you know what? I don't want to have, I want my children to be able to, like, they don't, my kids are not, they don't drink it, they're afraid of it. But right. Their children, some bit along the line, they're going to wake up. And I want that choice to be there for them so that if they choose, it's there. I don't push it at all, but when they do get around to realizing how much better it is for them, I want it there.
Well, yeah. I mean, the whole idea is about being healthy, and everything you put in your body has a reaction to it. So like Ira was saying that she didn't want to give her child antibiotics, right? Because antibiotics kill your gut.
Right.
And what really freaked me out is when she said, you know, the doctor wanted to put her on steroids or something. I mean, give me a freaking break. Yes. And this is the problem. It's not about, we don't have a health system. We've got a disease system, basically. And when I was young, some 138 years ago, Paul, you may remember this, and Karen, you may remember this, and Ira may remember this from her family. But I remember when I was a young guy, probably 10, 12 years old, we'd be out at my uncle's farms or something, and they would, if somebody had to take a pill, you know, a pill, it was hush hush. You know, like Aunt Susan, you know, she went to the doctor and they have her on a pill. And people regarded that as becoming feeble. Right?
Yes, I remember that. People discreetly took their pills. Today, right. Look, I take 30 pills a day.
Well, the pharmacist I know here in town, I talked to her about what percentage of people in my town, which is only 7,500 people, take pharmaceuticals. And we started ratcheting it up. And I said, oh, you're just kidding me, because she's got a good sense of humor. And she goes, no, I'm not. And I got up to 90%. And then I said, that's it. You're out of your mind. And she said, I'm not kidding you. She said, about 90% of the population in this town are eating some form of pharmaceutical. And if you said, you know, would you like some real food? They're afraid of it.
And that's the sad part. When they're offered, but the propaganda has been, like, all my life, I have heard that butter is bad for you. And 60 years of that kind of propaganda has an effect on people.
Well, I must be propaganda immune or something, because I remember, I mean, we grew up on butter and milk and stuff, and then all of a sudden butter and eggs would kill you.
Yes.
The propaganda was nuts. And then all of a sudden at home, margarine started showing up on the table, and people were buying fake eggs. I mean, what is that about? Or, well, we ate eggs, but we don't eat the yolk. Well, that's where all the protein's sitting, you idiot. And like 30 years later or whatever, then they come out and say, oh, well, we made a mistake now that we've given you all these drugs for high cholesterol, which you didn't need, and so on and so forth. Now butter's good for you. But I got hassles from my family. They go, what, you're eating butter? Yeah. Well, didn't you see the news?
The interesting part is, Ron, that Ron, you ate all that butter and you didn't put any weight on. Isn't that amazing?
Absolutely. Like I actually dropped about, I think my wife said, I don't know what she said I dropped. I was a lot bigger than I am now, but I was actually getting puffy. I was eating a lot of junk food, right? And I was actually getting very, my face was puffed out. Now I see that all the time in people. And I got allergic to MSGs, thankfully. Thankfully, I got allergic to it. So when I went to see the doctor, he says, you have acid reflux. I said, no, I'm allergic to something, right? And he wouldn't test me. He's, no, I'm telling you, I'm the doctor. Here's a prescription. You know, I take that and stuff where the sun don't shine. And I just removed all that stuff I just quit eating it all. And I dropped a lot of weight. And I never felt better, really, because, you know, my system's clean now, or as clean as I can get it. And that's what the whole thing is. I mean, even when I run into friends that I grew up with when I was a teenager, they're all talking about the pills they're taking, you know? And when I said, they go, what are you taking? I said, I don't take anything. And they look at me like there's something wrong with me.
Well, you see, and that's the problem. The people believe that the pharmacy is going to save them, but they need to go back to the farm and get real food, and then they won't need all that pharmacy.
Well, this is the thing that Ira told me last night when I was talking to her, that her, it was your grandma, right, Ira?
Yeah, she got tuberculosis. Yeah, it's a thing that, you know, everybody, the first thing, one of the first things that people mention when you talk about raw milk, they say, oh, you can get bovine tuberculosis. When my grandmother got tuberculosis in the 50s, tuberculosis bacilli are in the air. We breathe them. And if our immune system is working, it takes care of them. We don't get sick. Tuberculosis is the disease of malnourishment, and it was rampant in Europe in the beginning of the last century, where a lot of people from agricultural areas would move to the city to get a job, and there was not enough food, and that's why they were all getting sick with consumption. Now, when my grandmother got sick with tuberculosis, her doctor, medical doctor, told her to go to the farm and stay at the farm for a couple of months and drink a raw, fresh cow milk straight from the cow. And in a couple of months, she was back to her normal health. That's why I think it's so pathetic that people even think that it's possible to get tuberculosis from the cow, from a healthy cow. I never heard about farmers getting tuberculosis.
No.
I don't know if anyone did.
But I was just thinking while you were saying that, if a doctor in Ontario or Canada said that to someone today and it got out into the medical profession, they would hang him or her.
They'd lose their lives, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. That's how crazy this has become. But I'm so happy that you people do what you do, because it's, I didn't understand. I don't think I quite understood why they're coming after Michael, other than he's delivering it down to the city. Cause he did say prosecutor told him in 2010 at the trial then that it wouldn't bother him if he just went back home and so, you know, did his own thing. They wouldn't bother him. But I think the other problem with Michael is that, he was teaching people like you, right, Paul?
Yeah, that's true. Through his Calcare College.
Right. And he makes sure, because I know Michael has his milk tested all the time and you have your milk tested all the time, right?
That's correct.
Right. So this idea that your milk is dangerous is another misnomer. It's not, because it's all tested.
Yeah, we test it regularly, and all my test results are available for all the people to see if they want to look at them. We've never had a bad test, but all my tests are all available here for our customers to look at.
Yeah, and it's about cleanliness, right?
It is. It's about the milk in the udder is free of bacteria, right. So it's a matter of keeping the bacteria out of it. We've learned so much. This is not They started pasteurizing milk in this country in 1938. Well, this is not 1938 where everybody was milking by hand. Everybody, we have modern milking equipment if we keep it clean and well maintained. There's no reason why we can't produce good milk from good, healthy cows.
I don't know if you can even go there, you know, with the hand milking, because my uncle hand milked all his cows, and he had, I think, 10 or 11 kids, and nobody ever got ill from the milk. But you see, this is the difference between commercial and organic, if you will, is that you have a vested interest in making sure that this is clean, right?
That's true.
Well, I milked some cows in a commercial barn, and it wasn't anything like my uncle's barn, and it certainly isn't anything like Michael's barn. And when I was doing this on Tuesday night, saying you folks were going to be on the show, I was looking in the chat for the show, and people go, well, milk's all full of pus and mucus and all that kind of stuff. No, it's not. Okay. This is the big difference between raw milk and commercial milk. The commercial milk, it's a whole different ball game, because it doesn't matter. You open up that vat, you don't know what the hell you're going to see floating around in there.
The big thing about the biggest difference between raw or fresh milk, whatever we want to call it, and commercial pasteurized milk, once it's pasteurized, the milk has no ability. It becomes completely sterile or close to being sterile. But the raw milk has natural antibodies in it. And if you were to introduce bacteria into that milk, the natural antibiotics will overcome them and destroy them. But if you pasteurize that milk and then introduce those same bacteria, the bacteria will multiply, and that's why we have problems. And if we just watch the statistics, there's been so many people get sick from pasteurized milk products, and we haven't heard of anybody getting sick in this country from raw milk from good, healthy cows.
May I butt in?
Please do.
Yes.
Well, they pasteurize the milk here at 72 degrees. At 70 degrees, protein denatures. And the structure of the protein becomes harder to assimilate in the human body. Plus, all good bacteria, good microorganisms and enzymes are killed during the pasteurization. In Europe, don't know nowadays, maybe things changed, but when I lived there, the milk was heated to 65 degrees because pathogens die at 50 degrees. So they heat milk for 15 minutes at 65 degrees, which kills pathogens but doesn't kill enzymes and microorganisms. So the milk wouldn't last more than 3 days on the shelf. And after 3 days, it will start sour, and you get your yogurt, you can make your cream cheese, quark. It's still the product that is good for your body because it's full of acidophilus, whatever you name them, they're all still there. And the milk in Canada, when it's left on the counter, it doesn't sour, it rots. I remember when we just came to Canada, my friend tasted the milk for the first time, and she said, you know, it doesn't taste like milk. It tastes like rehydrated powdered milk. And we kind of agreed on that. It had that cooked aftertaste, which was very unpleasant.
Yeah, and see, you weren't used to it, right? And this is the problem.
No.
When people become used to things, they don't notice it, right? My old uncles, they could smell the chemicals. They don't eat meat out of the stores because they have a history of what was, right, to what is. They said they don't go near the meat counters because it stinks. They can smell the chemicals and everything in the meat, and they know that's not good for them. And, you know, so many of my relatives lived, you know, well into their mid-late 90s, but they didn't just live into that age group. They were healthy, right? They were still working.
Mm-hmm.
There's a big difference between life and life, right? I mean, if you I lived to be, 92 years old, but spent the last 10 years in a home with a tube in his face. That's not life, right? And that's what they take away from us when they take away our food.
And when you were talking about the commercial dairy farms, just 2 weeks ago, I met a man who grew up on the commercial dairy farm, and he used to work at the farm when he was in his 20s helping his parents. They don't own the farm anymore, but he said that they had over 250 cows and very few people to service them, that right. Those cows stayed in the barn. They were fed this commercial forage, whatever was there, GMO corn, and they never saw the sunlight. They barely moved. They just stood in their stalls because it would take forever just to take them out into the pasture. There was not enough pasture for them and bring them back. So, physically, it was impossible. And he said that the government quote was 11 cents per liter. And if the truck comes at noon, they have to deliver 11, the quota.
Right.
And he said under those conditions, we didn't have capacity to take care of the cows, sick cows, dirty cows. All that we had was the time to milk enough to meet the quota by the time the truck comes. He said we would milk the cows, we would pour the milk through the filter, and he told me, you don't want to know what's in the filter. The cows with mastitis, there would be blood, mucus, pus, manure. He said, I would give the filter to the dog, and there's so much organic matter that the dog would eat it. And then he said, we would cool that milk and ship it to the processing plant. He said, we never drank milk from those cows. We had a separate cow who was, eating in the pasture, and that was the milk that they had for their family. And he said, we would love to take care, better care of the cows. But in the situation when you are paid 11 cents per liter and it's all deliver, deliver, deliver. And he said if there was excess milk, they had to dump it in the ditch because if they produce more, then the government will drop the price per liter. And
that the sad part of that here is that most farmers would love to produce really healthy product. But
exactly.
They've got caught up in this agribusiness, and at 11 cents a liter, it's the same thing. If these farmers weren't so frightened and weren't in so much debt, you would find an awful pile of these dairy farmers bailing out of the milk marketing board because they have less stress on their animals, they have less stress on themselves, they obviously get a lot more liter. Money per liter, but at the same time, the more availability there is, the price is going to come down to a more reasonable level, and just like organic food is completely out of price because we can't produce enough of it. The government, while it says eat healthy, they're doing the opposite thing. So, I would think that an off a lot of these farmers, given the choice, would do exactly like Paul and Michael are doing. Now, I could be wrong on that. Paul, jump in on that.
Well, I have actually had some farmers who have made the step to go organic. They're commercial, but they are organic. And I've talked with quite a number of them, and they wish they could do what I'm doing. They really do.
Well, that's because you're a farmer. See, you're a farmer, and they're not. They're a commercial enterprise, right?
Yeah, they're in agribusiness, and I'm in agriculture.
Right. And I'm sure those guys are under a lot more stress, financially and otherwise.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. It's been a wet spring, and they're all wondering, when are we going to get on the land? We'll get on the land. Lots of good time. There's lots of time. And I have no stress about it. When it dries up, we'll get on the land because I don't have to run as many acres as they do to make a living. And so I can do a better job of what I am doing.
Yeah, farming has completely gone to hell as far as I'm concerned because You know, my wife grew up on a farm, and you know, most of the farms were 102 acres or 100, 200 acres, whatever, right? And they were good. And, you know, I blame the University of Guelph here in Ontario, actually, because if you study the history of that, the kids were sent to agricultural college, and they were taught all kinds of nonsense. And then they came back to their parents and told their parents they weren't farming right, you know? You have to get all this big equipment. You have to expand. You have to do this. You have to do that, and pretty soon they're destroying the land with the spray, and they've indebted themselves to the point of no return, and it's, you know, I blame the University of Guelph here in Ontario for destroying a lot of the farms.
And I believe you're right on that, and it's the universities throughout the world did that. But it started in the late 60s and then continued on through the 70s and on up. But now we're at the point where we're almost at the fourth generation since the chemical revolution came in. And so the young farmer, the 20-year-old farmer today, has no idea how to grow a crop without chemicals. And that's the sad part. We're losing the knowledge of how to farm properly.
But I also think we're almost at the tipping point. You know, I'm a firm believer that propaganda has a shelf life just like any other product. And I do believe the shelf life of the propaganda is about wore out.
I'd have to agree with you. I'd have to agree with you, Ron. I get to talk to a lot of younger farmers, and I'm going to say approximately 35 years old, and they're working with their fathers who are in their late 60s, but the father still holds the purse strings, and the 35-year-old, he wants to move towards a sustainable system, and maybe not directly to organic, but somewhere very close to that to start with, and it probably would eventually become organic. But the father won't let him, because the father remembers having had poor crops and having a weed problems, right? Uh-huh. And so he won't let his son, because the father in his entire farming career, he's seen yields go up and the weed problem go down. However, he did see the pest problem go up, all the insect burden on the crops, because the crops are not healthy anymore because of all the fertilizer and all the sprays and the dead soil. And a lot of these young fellows know that I farm organically, and I have since the mid-70s, so they would come to me and say, what do I do? And the best advice I could give them was, you take 20 acres. Talk your father into letting you run 20 acres of that the way you want to. And prove to him after 5 years that you can actually grow a good crop without putting all these inputs in. And then your father will understand, because there's one thing he does understand is economics. And that's the only way for these people to make that change. But I believe you're right. The propaganda is coming to an end, and there's lots of younger people looking for new ways to go back to the future, really.
The other thing, too, is the nutrient levels, be it in a carrot or a potato or whatever you're growing in the ground or the milk, the nutrient level is so much higher. You know, I'm seeing numbers that, you know, the carrots I buy in the store, if I'm lucky, has 60% of the nutrient value that it used to have. Now, you may call that wrong. I don't know.
No, you're right in that. And they can go back about 90 years now when they tested wheat. And it has about 35% of the nutrient value it had 90 years ago.
35%?
Yes.
So people are eating, but not getting the nutrition, right?
That's why everybody's getting overweight, because they're eating these empty calories to try and sustain life.
Because the body keeps craving for more nutrition.
Yeah, and it's the same as when your grandma went to the farm. Boom, she's better, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't recall anyone in my family suffering from all of this nonsense that people seem to be suffering today. And I mean, they were super healthy people, and they worked hard, and they played hard, and they ate well. And the idea, you know, I'm not really up on these vaccines either, not by a long shot. I think that's another real problem we have, because when you're eating nutritious food, you're not going to suffer from all of these oddball diseases they're coming up with now. And the idea of a child getting the measles or the mumps or whatever is for what purpose? To strengthen their immune system.
Yes. Yeah, that's another thing. All these vaccinations we give so that the children don't get all these things. When I was a child and the neighbors happened to have the mumps, well, let's go and visit them so the kids get them mumps, and then they'll be over them, and then they'll be immune.
Exactly. This is the natural course that we're supposed to be on, and they've interfered with it terribly. Can we get you back in here for a second, Karen?
Oh, yes.
You've been listening to this. What would you like to put into this?
Well, my big thing is that I think I agree with you about the tipping point, and Paul and I have talked about this before, that I think that the young people, and there's enough people that are sick and have had to find alternative routes, and they've turned to the natural way of, like, the slow food movement. Like, that's a huge movement, and that's all about, eating real food instead of processed food. I have to believe that, you know, like the 100 monkey story, you know the story about the 100 monkeys, right? Does everybody know that?
I don't think so.
Well, 100 monkeys, some monkeys on an island in the Pacific Ocean started doing something a different way. And when there were 100 monkeys doing that, I think it was washing their food, that spread to all the monkeys everywhere. So, you know, like, it's like a leap in consciousness. It's like all of a sudden there's a leap in consciousness. And I think, I hope and pray that that there's going to be a leap in consciousness, because you know what? And another thing that gets me is we do not de-evolve. As a human race, that was not the intention for us to come here and de-evolve. So we are, this is evolution, and we went all that silly route, and now we're coming out of it. And I have to believe that, because you know what? If I don't believe that, I don't want to be here. I don't want to be in a world where my kids have to eat, my grandkids can't feed their kids good, wholesome food, or that they don't know, like Paul said, they don't know how to even go out and plant a garden so that it yields. I have to believe that right will win over might.
Well, this is the same as me. Like, there's the old saying, you know, take heed, no man deceive you. And we've been terribly deceived. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm really excited about this time period, because I do believe this is the turning point. And I do believe it's our fault. I can't blame the chemical companies. I really can't blame the government. We allowed ourselves to be deceived. And I think that is running its course now. And people have seen all the damage done by the medical establishment and by the food establishment and so on and so forth. And now it's time that we took control of our food. And I do believe that is moving forward quicker every day. And I also believe that's one of the reasons they're trying to hang Michael. They're so desperate to hang Michael, because Michael is kind of the front man, right? Yeah, he's the front man, and he's a strong man. I mean, I was discussing this with somebody today. You know, I don't know. I mean, I get beat up here for things I do, but 24 years of constant unrelenting persecution, and to still be able to get up and stand up and say we're doing the right thing is you know, we should all be extremely proud of what Michael's done and accomplished so far, and we also need to be there to support You know, I don't look at Michael as any sort of a hero. I do look at him as a man that we should appreciate, and that we need to stand with, and teach other people. But he's been all over Hell's Half Acre trying to teach farmers and that the proper way to farm, and I guess the government doesn't much appreciate it, and they figure, I guess, if they can take Michael down, they'll put the fear of other people, put fear into the other people and make them easier to handle, type of thing. So it's very, very important that we support Michael. And because when we support Michael, we're actually supporting ourselves.
I think that's the most important thing, Ron. If we don't support Michael, then we don't stand up for ourselves.
Exactly.
When we stand with Michael, we stand with ourselves, but we stand with Michael and we stand as a group.
A community.
And the interesting part is the government, the powers that be, are seeing more and more people standing with Michael.
Yeah.
The first time they raided his farm, he stood alone.
Yeah.
That didn't happen. The last time they raided, he didn't stand alone.
No, that was fantastic. I mean, and I am also adamant, and I'm going to keep saying this. The women,
you know,
I'll just quick. I am so proud of the ladies, and I'm really not too happy with the guys. You know, it's the ladies. When I was over at Michael's, I didn't get there till late in the afternoon. They were just unloading the truck. And it was the women, not the men. It was the women who stood the ground as far as I could see. And I'm running into this all over the place. Some of the best researchers I know are women. They're very strong. And we need to, quit worrying about the hockey game, guys. You know,
but it was a good game last night.
It may have been, but we have a much more interesting game going on here, guys.
Yes,
you know, it's the future. If we don't do what we need to do, okay, and I keep saying this as well, is that we have a duty. We most definitely have a duty to our forefathers, the children, the grandchildren, those not yet born. We have a duty to all of those. Because if we don't get this turned around, someday in the future, some child is going to find a book or a CD or something and realize what could have been and what is, and we'll end up standing over a grave just looking at it going, like, why didn't you do something?
Yeah, I have to agree 100% with that, Ron. It is so important that we can look at ourselves and say, I seen what was going on, and I tried to do something about it. And hopefully we win that battle. And I have to every step.
We're going to win it.
Well, I think we're going to win it because it's right. And that's the most important thing to understand. It is right.
It is.
May I add something?
Yes, please.
Yes, thank you. I think Michael's case is it's symbolic of our independence. Because in the same way as the cows in the large-scale dairy operations have no access to the food of their choice, like fresh green grass, and they have to eat anything from GMO corn to gummy worms and Skittles because the farmers can't afford the proper forage for them. In the same way, we are becoming more and more dependent on the government to feed us if they cut this connection between the producers of food, direct connection, and the consumers. And the government and corporations, they're working against the natural laws because people will always eventually gravitate towards natural laws. And if the government thinks that they can control people through fear to the degree that we will have to ask them what we are allowed to eat, I think they should have a mandatory parliamentary reading of the Orwell's 1984 and figure out how far they want to go down the rabbit hole.
Well, we already have 165 square foot condos being sold. So that takes me right back to Winston's little cement condo that he was in.
It's beehives. You know,
Yeah, I mean, my favorite thing in Orwell was when him and his girlfriend were together above that little antique store or whatever, and his girlfriend says to Winston, you know, like, why don't we just get out of here? And he goes, go where? And she goes, anywhere. And he goes, everywhere is the same. And that's mm-hmm. a frightful thought.
Yes, yes.
So I'm a firm believer that Canada is the country that's going to swing this around and be the light. I truly am.
Another little thing is, like, the government, Minister of Health, they're in denial. They keep quoting some information from 1928 when somebody got sick and this and that, and they are completely refusing to look at the modern science. They completely refuse to collect all these, like, what they call anecdotal stories of miraculous healing from raw milk. Why don't they study it? Why don't they fund a profound study and collect real scientific information if they call it anecdotal stories? I think it's some sort of a, you know, I don't know, North American superiority complex. Well, they think we are the best. What we say goes. They forget that European culture is over 2,000 years old, and Asian culture and Middle Eastern culture, they're over like 7,000 years old. And people drink raw milk there, and there's no problems at all. They call them third world countries. They you know, call them poorly informed and uneducated, but they're forgetting that what's Canada is made of. Those third world country citizens who came here to, you know, build a new life. And, you know, if we talk about personal freedoms, not political, not ideological, there are all kinds of regimes out there where you cannot speak up your mind because they're listening. Here you can because they don't. But I'm talking about personal freedoms. No one should be telling me what to eat and where to get my food from and what kind of milk I am allowed to drink. If they trust me to vote for them, why don't they trust me to make smart, reasonable decisions about what food is good for me and for my children? You know, if I'm smart enough to vote, I should be smart enough, you know, to make those decisions for myself.
But Ira, you know, I look at the raw milk. I look at the real quick. I look at the milk situation. It's all about control. It's all about monopoly.
Of course.
They have the monopoly on the milk, and they've had it for a very long time, and they don't want to give it up. Now, you could look at it the opposite of the marijuana business now that the government is just getting the monopoly on. It's the same game except in reverse. You know, they told everybody, you know, how bad marijuana was, until they got control of the business. Now all of a sudden it's a health food and something we can tax and control. And so just about control, that's all it's about. Once they have control, they don't want to let go of it. There's money in control, right? And, you know, if the farmer's only getting 11 cents a liter for his milk, where's all this money going? Because you're paying a hell of a lot more than 11 cents a liter for your milk at the store.
Why isn't that in the paper? Why don't people know that, though? I never knew that the farmers only got. I never knew the raw deal that the farmers get.
Right now, the farmers in Ontario here are getting about 70 cents a liter. That's about what the price is here. In the States, they're getting something around 16 or somewhere between 16 and 30. I'm not sure what it is right now. I know last fall it was 16 cents. So there's a big difference between here and the United States.
But still, even 70 cents a liter.
As some of them, their cost of production is higher than 70 cents. And all of the producers in Ontario is certainly higher than 16 cents. There's nobody can produce milk at that price here in Ontario.
Yeah, so it's just they have it's the bureaucracy. They have the control, and they don't want to give it up.
Like Ira said, if the people go out there, it's the people who decide how we're going to be treated, right?
Exactly.
So we get the people out to support Michael. And they remember, Paul, when you were standing in that parking lot and you looked up and all those people were coming towards you.
And that was an amazing sight, and I wish we'd had a picture of that. That was just an amazing sight as the people came in there, and they were like a bunch of flies to honey. That's the best I can describe it. All of these people, the parking lot filled up in about 6 or 7 minutes.
This is what scares the government so much. Like, they were used to being able to, you know, like they targeted Michael. And the idea is to intimidate and to hurt and to make them lay down. And Michael's got no lay down in him, which encourages the other people. Now, they're still fearful, right? They're still looking to Michael. And I keep telling them, you know, you can't look at him, because the idea is to take what you see as a hero down. And once that hero goes down, you become complacent again. And so it's very important. And they see this rising, this building, and they see the strength in the people building. And it's actually, they're the ones that are afraid.
Right on.
And we can't let up on that. So just quickly, it's an injunction against Michael, which is going to be on the 29th and 30th in Newmarket, Ontario, at the courthouse. And I encourage everybody to come down and participate, or at least, say a prayer at night, whatever, because they're going to try and do something nasty here. Now, I was looking at the factum, and really quickly, somebody tell me if I'm right or wrong. I'm going to go see Michael tomorrow. But there's like about 70 people on that list. Are all these people going to give evidence?
I don't know if everybody will be giving evidence, but I know
it's all affidavits, right?
There's an awful lot of affidavits in there. So
yeah, I think it's seven.
That number is probably up there. It could be greater than that. I'm not sure, but yes, and those are people who, they're standing up to say, I need my raw milk. And they, a lot of those affidavits, some people shared me their affidavits with me, and they're very well written, and they are not, this is not anecdotal evidence. These are case studies. Every one of those affidavits represents a case study, and the government has to look at that.
Okay, we're just about out of time here, but I don't know if you want to do this, Paul or Kathy. I was talking to Michael, I think, last night, and I told him we were doing this tonight, and wondered if he would like to participate. Like, we do a two-hour show on Sunday, so next Sunday's Mother's Day, so the Sunday after on the 21st. And Michael sounds interested in getting in on this. So I know Karen can't be available, and I want to thank you, Karen, for being here today. I don't know if you're available, Paul, or what, or Ira, but I'd really like to do something here prior to just coming up. We get into a lot deeper than we could possibly get into in an hour tonight. So give that some thought, folks. I want to thank you. Oh, Paul, real quick, where can people find your video?
There's a video which was done in our barn. That is go on YouTube, print in organic or raw milk, one or the other, and Paul Noble, and it'll pop up.
Okay. I'll dig that out and put it over on my Facebook and my blog and that as well. So Paul, Karen, Ira, thank you very much for doing this, and hopefully we can do it again. But again, this is about standing up for our food rights, and the court case is in Newmarket on the 29th and 30th of May. So hopefully, you know, people can get there and show some support, because your food's important to you, and it's important to your children, so you need to participate. Okay, thanks everybody for being in on this. We're out of time. Okay, thank you very much, everybody. Take care.
Selling lies and buying time, killing people next in line. Lower class and social slime, they don't matter. Genocide, sick from water, sick from air. Making money, they don't care. Censorship, force of air. Fuck them back, it's only for them more. They shoot, they kill, they mass on progress.